It's Thursday, January 23rd, 2025, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca, and today is another full show episode of Not Even Mad. In fact, if you just want a mainstream Not Even Mad episodes, there's a feed for that. In other words, it's its own standalone podcast, and we'll post those every time an episode emerges. We're hoping, at least right now, every other week, and we're switching up combinations of guests, but we want to get a stable. It was Liz Wolf and Michael Cohen last week. Today, we're joined by Matt Welch, who works for the same publication that Liz Wolf does. It's Reason. But I got to tell you, and we get to this in the show a little bit, or more in the Not Even Mad specific feed, libertarians are they're almost inherently heterodox. They believe in the markets, but then what does a belief in the market even mean? The great thing about pairing Welch and Cohen is that I think Cohen is pretty much a liberal, a good, true, down-the-line liberal who, as you'll hear, really honestly thinks Donald Trump is an idiot. And thinks that not just because it's fun to call your political enemies idiots, but he thinks he's an unsmart guy. You may agree. Welch disagrees, and disagrees about a lot of the policies. So we talk about the policies. And it's good to be able to talk about the policies, even if the policies themselves are not good policies. Because the first term of the Trump administration was based on a lot of tea reading or trying to work out his often mangled syntax or trying to go inside his brain, see what he meant to say or maybe wanted to say or would have said if he could get away with it. Then, if you're being honest with yourself, try to take out your own biases. If you're just trying to appeal to an audience, lean on the best possible interpretation of that. Bring out those contents of his brain, surface it to the public, and try to say, see, this is what's going on. And you never knew what's going on. He didn't always know what's going on for a few reasons. It was very frustrating to figure out what he really wanted and what he really meant. He would say things as trial balloons. That's how he got, and the Mexicans will pay for it. He would say things because he was just wrong. He would say things because he wanted them to be true, such as Alabama and hurricanes and a Sharpie. He would say things because he was angry at other people and that anger would dissipate, or he would get distracted, or people on his staff, the kind of person who is no longer on his staff, would make sure that they put a document in a drawer where he had no follow-up. It's all very different now, but at least it's less frustrating that we're doing less interpreting and more looking at documents, looking at executive orders. And that's what we do on the bulk of this show, on the bulk of Not Even Mad. There's a lot of ambiguity to the executive orders. We'll be covering this on and on in the gist. What do these ICE raids mean? There's a lot of ambiguity to what exactly the documents mean. Right. So we've taken a inchoate idea that might be rattling around in the Trump brain. Now we've put it on paper in the form of an executive order. It definitely says some things against DEI. But what's the practical concern? That is an area of interpretation. But at least it's out in the open and it's written down on paper. And it's not the interpretation of what this guy meant or meant to say if he could say the things correctly. I believe we say most of the things correctly on this episode. Please enjoy it. Michael Cohen, Matt Welch, oh, and me, Mike Pesca, are Not Even Mad. Hello, and welcome back to a new and improved, or at least new and even less mad version of America's favorite aspirationally named political panel show, Not Even Mad. Today, we speak of what Trump said, but more importantly, what Trump has done. He's done a lot, dozens and dozens of executive actions. As we do so, we promise to uphold our reputation for refutation, while at the same time vowing to be not even mad. I say we. Who are we? Well, one of us is Michael A. Cohen, columnist for MSNBC, a senior fellow and co-director of the Afghanistan Assumptions Project at the Center for Strategic Studies. He's the author of American Maelstrom, the 1968 election, and the politics of division. Michael, the politics of division? How'd you know? You're anticipating the present.
Amazing. I'm a soothsayer.
Yeah. Also, given to the saying of sooths, Matt Welch, editor-at-large for Reason Magazine, one of the three co-hosts of the Fifth Column podcast. I know, like it's like the third, fifth bank, three co-hosts, five hosts, but go with it. It's a great podcast. Welch, how are you? And maybe you could tell us how close you are to Mr. Cohen, not just ideologically, but geographically.
I am recording unusually from Chinatown. Otherwise, I could walk down the street about 5.5 minutes. I would pass through a park that my kids both refer to as Michael Cohen Park.
Wow.
And I would see Mr.
Wow.
Cohen in his lair.
So
yeah,
touched.
This has been a thing for several years now.
Because Michael Cohen just sets up shop there and feeds the pigeons and yells.
I have been known to yell at pigeons. That has happened a few times.
I don't want to talk out of school, but you know, he acts in certain predictable patterns. Let's say.
So let's get to topic okay. number one.
In playgrounds, you're saying
yeah.
in playgrounds.
Yeah, totally yes, fine.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Thank
Sometimes
you
he shows up yeah. with a child of his own, but you know, it's not necessary.
Occasionally.
So let's get to the topics, and usually how the inauguration is handled is, what about the speech? And in this case, what about the kind of rebuttal or amendment or footnoted angry after speech from Emancipation Hall? But what I really want to talk about are the reams and reams of executive actions. I'll start with one. To safeguard the American people's freedom to choose from a variety of goods and appliances, including but not limited to light bulbs, dishwashers, washing machines, gas stoves, water heaters, toilets, and shower heads, and to promote market competition and innovation within the manufacturing and appliance industries. That obviously Section 2, Subsection F of that particular executive action. Welch, I'll start with you. Was that your favorite? Do you have another executive action that was notable, favorite, or that you decry especially?
There's so many things that happen at once. It's kind of hard to keep track of them. It's exactly what they're trying to do.
Light bulbs and washing machines all at the same time.
Oh, I like the light bulbs and washing machines. Probably like all the ones that I like, there's going to be some either fine print or some logical extension that I hadn't thought of that will make it a really, really bad idea. That includes ones I like very much, like his abolition of Joe Biden's day one equity, a whole of government order that he issued, not to a whole lot of fanfare, but I wrote about it at the time for Reason and criticized it. And people who worked in federal government agencies that I know have been complaining about it, not libertarians at all, been complaining about it ever since. And so it was good to rescind that. And I like that. And I'm sure something in the fine print of that one is going to be terrible. Ones that I actively disliked, and it's worth pointing out probably more than the arm angle of Elon Musk at any given time, is that we've stopped the refugee program in the United States of America. That is a huge and terrible thing. It is an awful thing to do. Trump basically did the same thing in his first administration, especially in the last couple of years. And then COVID happened and we choked it down to something like 11,000 a year. We are the leading country in the world, or have been, of accepting refugees. It's fundamental to our country's character, leadership role in the world. I dare say that it's possible that both of you have family members who were admitted by some kind of refugee program in this country. I don't know if it's a refugee program, but I had a refugee from Europe come at some point myself. And it's incredibly disheartening. And cutting off immigration, legal immigration, itself is very bad. And then trying to, almost like Joe Biden tweeting out the ERA amendment at the last minute, trying to amend the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, and birthright citizenship by executive order. It shows that we're in a real kind of silly and stupid season of presidents just trying to do the Constitution on a whim.
Well, on the refugee question, I mean, Michael Cohen is maybe something of an expert on this, because the group that I saw making the most noise about this were the ones who were advocating for all those Afghan translators to get into the country. And that hasn't happened. That's a promise not kept. And I'll just opine and say I agree with Welch. That's a shame.
I agree 100% with Matt. And the Afghan thing is actually, you're talking about people who are family members of American service members who are not being able to come to the country. People who already were supposed to come to the country, whose basically travel has been suspended, their right to travel to the United States. But I want to just pick up on the 14th Amendment thing, because to me, this is just, It's just, imagine Joe Biden comes into office and says, I'm going to sign executive order no longer acknowledging the Second Amendment, and I'm going to order, the ATF to basically seize people's guns. I mean, that's almost akin to what Trump is doing here. He's saying that the plain text of the 14th Amendment, which grants birthright citizenship, is actually, he's not going to acknowledge it. This is just utter lawlessness on the part of Trump. And in fact, it's only one of the examples of the lawlessness. The other one I want to mention is the TikTok ban. I don't have a real opinion about TikTok, except I don't want my kids to look at it.
That's a real opinion.
So in that sense, I'm kind of glad they're
banning
it. There's
a Cohen family ban, is what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, Cohen family ban. Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. That was a law passed by Congress in a bipartisan manner. It passed overwhelmingly by Congress. It was upheld by the Supreme Court days before it went into effect. And then Trump comes in and says, you know what? We don't have to abide by this. And not just does TikTok not have to abide by it, but all the companies that are going to be affected by this, the third parties, these agencies saying they're not going to face any kind of legal action over them not enforcing this ban. So to me, this is just an example of what I think many of us are afraid of, this administration just simply not interested in the law, in the Constitution, in the rule of law in general, and just sort of making up its own rules as it goes along. Now, I am somewhat confident that no court is going to uphold this executive order on birthright citizenship. And to be clear, most executive orders are basically meaningless statements of principle that actually, you know, when they have to be implemented, that's when actually things become more challenging. But it's not a good sign when you have an administration that's acting so lawlessly on day one. And again, as bad as the 14th Amendment is, and some would think the TikTok thing is worse. It's just basically saying, I don't have to abide by this law that went into effect, you know, the day before I came to office or 2 days before I got into office. That's not how our system of government is supposed to work.
There's a kind of palindrome of suckage in the last 4 days from Biden to Trump. It's a really grim 4 days for those of us dead enders who like the rule of law and
yeah.
That laws mean something and there's a way to do stuff and language matters and all that stuff. Starting with Biden's ERA amendment nonsense, just tweet it out. Like, what are you even doing? So Biden does like,
but
I'll
tweet
out the
Constitution. Just go back and tell everyone, because people might not have noticed this.
Yeah. So on Friday, Biden said the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, which I think at its peak was passed by 35 states, which is less than what you need 38 to ratify it. And then some unratified it afterwards, so just never quite got to the finish line. He just declared that yes, it did pass the finish line. It's now part of the Constitution. So tweets I, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris retweeted out, and all these sort of Democratic, including like Democratic legal groups, like, yep, that's definitely the thing. So he did that on Friday. Right? So you have how can we just sort of tweet out the Constitution? Do an incredibly corrupt pardon process for cronies, And also Biden said he wasn't going to enforce the TikTok law either. Granted, yes. He only had a few more hours left, but he made pains to say he's not going to do that. What happens then? New president, even before he's president, says, yeah, we're not going to enforce TikTok. Let's also do some cronyist pardons over here. And we're going to just sort of executive order the Constitution away. All of this is bad. If you're a critic like there used to be on both sides of the aisle of the aggrandizement of executive power under Bush and Cheney, for example, used to be something people talked about a lot. If you're a critic of that, that's a problem. It's very monarchical 4 day period there. And then if you just think that there should be a process and text and laws and all that kind of stuff, pretty grim business.
Yeah, I think the ERA point is a pretty good parallel because here are the facts of it, such as they are. Virginia ratifies it a couple years ago in 2020, and that's the 38th state to ratify it, actually. Nevada did a couple years before that, and there in Illinois in 2018. So, okay, 35 needed to ratify, now it's 38, but you're right. Some states did go back, and this was after, I mean, proponents of this would say that there's no timeline on this, but some states themselves did put in a timeline, or if not implemented as an amendment, this no longer counts. So there are legal experts, and I had Kate Shaw on the show, and she's smart, and she's on one of these Pod Save America shows, and she was insisting to me that the ERA really is a law, only for, or really is a constitutional amendment, Only the people who actually recognize this, namely the U.S. archivist, Colleen Shogan, has always said it is the policy of the archives that it's just not. That's not how it works. So it is a little like a progressive version of the independent state legislature theory. Like, you could assert that there is an alternate reality that is, but it just isn't. And the people who are actually in charge, if we're going to default to experts and the people who make the rules, like, we should be consistent and do that even when the rules cut against progressivism. And that's why I do think it's like the 14th Amendment. The only difference is Biden knew that he was engaging in some malarkey. And so he did it on the sixth to last day of his presidency, knowing that it wouldn't stand. Trump tries it on the first day and, you know, unleashes the chaos into the winds. But Cohen, you were going to say.
No, but here's the thing. I don't think these two are comparable for what it's worth. But what really annoys me about the ERA thing is that, as you point out, there is a legal argument that the ERA hasn't ratified, that the Congress cannot put a timeline in place for when an amendment has to be ratified by. That is a legal argument. And that legal argument could have been tested had Biden instructed the archivist to publish the amendment as ratified, because then you create a legal, just someone is going to sue over that, and he goes to the courts. He could have done that. That would have been actually kind of maybe a useful task. He didn't do that. He just said it, didn't instruct the archivist, who made clear she's not going to do this. So basically, it's a meaningless step intended to pacify people. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand was, you know, my senator from New York. She's made a big issue out of this. It was intended to pacify them, but not actually do anything. So if you're going to do it, then do it. Then actually tell the archivist to publish it. Because if they publish it, then you got a legal case. He didn't do that. It's pointless. It's just symbolic drivel as far as I'm concerned.
One last little point on the Trump birthright citizenship thing. They didn't just say that we no longer recognize this as an intrinsic right. They actually expanded it to people who are here legally. As David Beer from Cato Institute has pointed out and predicted ahead of time, it's written in such a way that could basically, it would have said that Kamala Harris wasn't a citizen, which is just insane.
Feature not a bug, so, I think, to them.
When you expand even this pretty radical notion, when, you know, all considering the jurisprudence on this, which has been pretty consistent since 1898, when you expand it, it's almost as if you're saying, yeah, it's probably going to get struck down, which Joe Biden did a couple of times in his presidency as well. And I just think it's just such a frivolous way to go through life. Donald Trump, you mentioned the post-inauguration speech. He also had the post-post, which was the executive signing order bull session that he did. And someone asked him in that process, like, don't you think some of this is going to get struck down? It's like, yeah. We go pretty hard there in the paint, so, you know, maybe. We kind of expect that from Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean that we should necessarily tolerate that from either him or anybody else.
Yeah, so the to give, I guess, voice to the people who would say it's maybe not a constitutional slam dunk, however hard in the paint you're going to go. I don't know, maybe it's a 7-foot jump shot. Goes like this, 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and states wherein they reside. I mean, that seems clear, except for the subordinate clause and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. There, you could find an actual legal scholar from even an Ivy League university who would say, well, that hasn't really been adjudicated. And if you were the child of a person here illegally, let's say, that person wouldn't be subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Therefore, loophole, and maybe birthright citizenship shouldn't be. I mean, to me, I talked about independent state legislature theory. It seems a lot like when Donald Trump was shopping around for a theory to overturn the election. And you know, what's the lesson there? Don't do it, that it doesn't work. I don't think Donald Trump took that lesson. So this is why he's going to try
this. I don't think
he
should
have.
Yeah. I mean, his lesson is I can shop around, I can start an insurrection, and guess what? I can go back to becoming president.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe the lawyers who advise me will all be disbarred, but here I am.
Sure. That's not my problem.
Yeah, exactly. The DEI one, I think, Matt, is a little bit like what you're talking about, which is, I think DEI goes way too far in many ways. And yet what Trump does, just like with birthright citizenship, he's been campaigning on it. You knew he was going to do something to strike out against it, maybe a little like the pardons for the January 6th rioters. You knew that he was going to pardon a bunch of them, but he goes all the way. He goes maximally. And with the DEI rescinding it, not only has he told everyone who has some part of their job that's DEI, and I would assume everyone who works in an HR department in every federal agency has DEI at some part of their job. So were they all done by 5 o'clock on Wednesday? I have no idea. But my point is, it goes all the way back to the Lyndon Johnson administration and undoes some, except to a certain brand of very far-right people, some version of equal rights that the vast majority of people not only have no problem with, but like and want America to actually have some diversity and some inclusion. Equity is a word that no one knows the definition of. So I think he's going too hard and too far on that one as well.
Well, I'd like to hear what that part is, because I'm unaware that he is defanging the Civil Rights Act beyond saying, and I think this is an executive order from today, where he went back, and this is a significant thing, saying we're going to stop affirmative action in the federal government. I think that's big. I also think it's popular. And at this point, I would argue just. It's not on my front plate of like what I need to have done to make myself happy policy-wise. But there's a strong argument that, you know, that John Roberts' argument, as much as it really irritates people, of like, you know, in order to stop racial discrimination, we should stop discriminating based on race. There's something tautologically true about that. And there's something, and I've been infected by my co-host Camille Foster at the Fifth Column, there's something pretty arbitrary about our modern notions of race over time. And so I think that's an appropriate thing to do. If he, in that same thing, is saying that we are going to deny civil rights protections that were enshrined in law as of 1965, then I'm not aware of that. And I would love to be educated, Mr. Pesca.
See, that's, I think, you get to something that I think people have to be aware of with these executive orders. A lot of this is aspirational, and a lot of it just applies to federal government. You know, it's not the case that, now maybe the Justice Department, which I think this happened during Trump's first term, will simply just not pursue civil rights litigation. That's certainly something that wouldn't surprise me. And they might weaken civil rights protections. But those kind of decisions are ones that, you know, they do have to sort of deal with the courts that will have some opinions about that. A lot of what he's done so far is symbolic. You know, that it's more just kind of saying, this is kind of what my intentions are. This is kind of how I'm approaching this term in office. And so I think, you know, whether it'll be a backlash, whether it'll be some kind of, I don't think so. I think it's going to affect a lot of people directly. And I think that's kind of where a lot of this feels more like show and bluster and demonstrated lawlessness, as I pointed out earlier, and sort of cruelty. But I don't know that's really things that are going to affect people directly and going to have a huge political impact.
I feel like that there is, with other things in the cultural moment, you know, everyone's been having these arguments about have we passed peak woke or whatever. And I don't necessarily have a big opinion about that, but I think the election was an interesting moment in all of this, and the sort of Justine Bateman saying we were walking on eggshells for 4 years, whether you agree with her or not, there's a feeling of that among a not insubstantial number of people, and not just Republicans. And so something about that feels different. I think there's a lot of ring-kissing Silicon Valley companies right now who are rushing to say,
a lot of ring-kissing.
We never liked DEI anyways, the ones that we just did ourselves because our employees were asking us to. But I think you will feel some of that in private corporate culture that doesn't necessarily interact with the federal government, that with the way the winds are blowing, and also just the fact of saying that we're not going to have DEI programs in the federal government. Federal government's a big place. It's a big organization, sadly.
Right.
It's Michael Cohen's fault, but it's this big place.
Hey,
if you're going to stop doing
it. If you want to blame me, I'm fine with that, by the way. I believe in a big federal government, so I'm completely
okay
with
that. Got what you wanted, pal. But I think that it will have bigger effect than just symbolism, or I should say that the symbolism will have bigger effect than we think textually, perhaps, just on this and a couple other ones. But largely, I do agree with you that many of these are just like, hey, we want to be number one now, you know, it's on that level.
No, I think that's a great observation, actually, Matt. You're right. I mean, there is this vibe shift, although I think it's being like incredibly overstated and how significant it is. But yes, you do see it. Some of the corporate world, you do see it with these sort of, I love this term, the broligarchy. Yeah. Yeah. So I like that. I think that's true. But I you know, there is a vibe shift, but that I think predates the executive orders. But yeah, that has happened. Whether it will continue, we will see. I you know, my view of this is it will not. And that isn't necessarily a Trump, anti-Trump argument. It's just basically an anti-incumbent argument that we have now had, you know, three straight one-term, two one-term presidents in a row, and now another, what actually will be a one-term president, unless the Constitution
We have stochastic presidencies. Trump's.
Right. So what's happening in our politics are this almost pendulum, these huge pendulum swings of backlash against the party in power. And I fully expect that there will be a backlash against Trump. There'll be a backlash over when he puts tariffs into effect that cause inflation to go up. There'll be a backlash when he, deports lots, I don't think it'd be millions, but lots of undocumented immigrants, and it causes food prices and housing prices to go up. And I think those will have more of an effect than this. But I think you're right that, you know, in the near term, this does kind of play into the argument that we've seen this vibe shift as far as culturally. Now, I am just going to say for the record now, on January 22nd, I am skeptical whether that continues. And that maybe, you know, it was only 4 years ago, the vibe shift was moving in the other direction, right? I mean, George Floyd, those protests were 4.5 years ago. People may forget about that. That had a huge impact on the culture. And of course, you could say this is a backlash to that, but who's to say it's not going to be a backlash to Trump 4 years from now? I just
2020
don't
overstate
it, I guess I'm saying.
2020 was a vibe nervous breakdown in every single direction, I think.
In many respects.
Yeah.
But it also was, and let's be clear about this, a full rejection of Donald Trump. Certainly a larger rejection of Donald Trump than a rejection of Joe Biden in this election. And so all I'm saying is that I'm not making a judgment one way or the other. I'm just saying that this is kind of the politics we're living in right now, in which there is this thermostatic public opinion shifts dramatically from I like Democrats to I hate the Democrats, to I like Republicans, I hate the Republicans. That's all I'm saying. I think there's the backlash is coming and it's more to do with the sort of anti-incumbency that has become so prevalent in our political culture than even Trump himself.
So
without disagreeing, can I just interject? Because screw it. I'm a guest. You have to treat me nice. I think if Biden stays in the race, he loses by more than Trump lost in 2020.
Maybe. That might be true. Hard to question that.
Let's take a break. Don't worry. We'll talk about rhetoric. I like talking about talking. And maybe we'll talk about one or two more executive orders. And of course, Go Grinders in the next segment of Not Even Mad. And we're back with Not Even Mad. My guests are Matt Welch and Michael Cohen. Welch and Cohen. We got a Army McCarthy hearing vibe going on here at long last. Don't worry, they've retained their dignity. Hey, Cohen, you want to talk about pardons? Because I was disgusted. You know, I like to be an above the fray, moderate centrist, but this actually got me in the gut. And when I looked at rewatched video. Of a guy smashing a police officer over and over again with an American flag, or this guy David Dempsey, who used crutches and poles and sprays and assaulted numerous officers, to see these guys walk free. I'm not even talking about Enrique Tarrio, who wasn't there at the time, though I think guilty of seditious conspiracy. I think it was apt. I'm talking about people who picked up a fire extinguisher and struck Brian Sicknick with it, and then he died the next day, for them to get pardoned. I think it's nothing short of an abomination. But I can't believe you were defending it. No, I know you weren't. Tell me what you think.
I think abomination is like a nice word to put it. I can sit here and sort of be a little bit sanguine about the executive orders and their impact. But, you know, the full-scale assault on the rule of law that Trump has put in place by pardoning all these people, it's really hard to quantify just how bad this is. I mean, to my mind, you know, it legitimizes political violence. It legitimizes political violence as long as it's being done by people who support the person who's president. And this was the largest DOJ investigation in American history. You're talking about, I think it was 1,500 people who were prosecuted. And for Trump to, I think it was more than that. And for Trump to simply, with the swipe of a pen, just to say all that effort, all that work to hold people responsible for who attacked the Capitol, you know, it's just, it's gross. And I, you know, I just want to say for the record, I know, you know, I'm not going to sit here and defend Joe Biden's pardons of his family. I'm not going to do that. But these things are not even comparable. This is just an absolutely atrocious act by Trump. And I think one that's got long-lasting consequences. You know, we basically – and what I think is even more troubling about this is that this isn't a surprise, right? Trump ran on this. He said very clearly he was going to do this. And American people were basically said, okay, we're still going to vote for you because the price of eggs are too high. You know, to my mind, the fact that he even considered pardoning people responsible for January, that he still lies about the election, he lied about it yesterday, again, called it rigged, again, that people are just validating that. That's what makes it so much worse. Americans simply don't care what happened on January 6th. They don't care that Trump abetted this insurrection. They don't care the violence that occurred that day. And they basically have given him and all these people a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions based on that. One, do you think there'll be political blowback? It polls really bad. And two, what do you make of those in Trump's orbit, like Mike Johnson and J.D. Vance, who basically assured anyone who would listen, well, not the violent ones, not the cop beaters. Do you think that was purposeful propaganda, or were they in the dark?
Oh, God, come on. J.D. Vance in the dark about what Donald Trump's going to do? Of course. Both, I would say, in the dark and also doing what a lot of people who have made their peace with Donald Trump on the right have done, which is just kind of look the other way. I mean, Mike Johnson had a quote today, this morning, where he said something to the effect of, like, you know, I don't want to talk about the January 6th pardons. He was questioned about this and said, like, I let's not dwell on the past. We're going to move forward. And then, like, a half an hour later, it's like new investigations into the corrupt, you know, House Select Committee about January 6th, says Mike Johnson.
Well, also, by the way, calling for investigation of the Biden pardons, too.
So we're definitely going to live in the future. It's ridiculous. I wrote a piece going into between 2023 and 2024, a year-end thumbsucker. And my prediction was that in the year 2024, we would see political violence in the streets. And this is before a lot of other stuff happened. And of course, we did see political violence in the streets. Not very hard. It's a big country. There's going to be violence. But part of it, I argued then, was that because we haven't had an honest conversation with ourselves about the aforementioned riots around after the George Floyd killing at the hands of police in Minneapolis at all. Didn't have an honest conversation with ourselves about what happened in Portland for however many hundreds of straight days of ransacking the federal building there, and also street clashes to a lesser degree. But there was violence there constantly. And on the right especially, we didn't have an honest conversation about January 6th. And you saw that yesterday with Trump. Michael's right to point out the insane things that Trump was saying, not just that it's rigged, that he kept calling these people hostages. That's a word that has a certain kind of resonance in today's geopolitics. That's grotesque. The J6 hostages. He about 17 times blamed Nancy Pelosi for what happened on January 6th. He hasn't, and of course we shouldn't expect him to ever take any kind of intellectual blame for whipping up a totally bullshit conspiracy theory about the rigged election and then encouraging people to go storm the Capitol. He won't do that. He'll continue to sort of lie about it and deflect blame. So if we're not going to have ourselves those honest conversations, and then you have Luigi Mangione killing a UnitedHealthcare CEO in the streets of Point Blank, and way too many people on the left are like, you know what? Sorry, bro. That's what happens. We are not ready for that conversation at all. And we saw yesterday with Trump's action, which is despicable. I would have been happy. Not just like, oh, maybe that's okay. Happy if he would have commuted a lot of those sentences. I think there was a lot of over-sentencing that was going on. I think the seditious conspiracy convictions, and I get it, I'm a weirdo libertarian, but I think some of those were incoherent, the way that they were charged, the length of time. So pardon or commute, I should say. Commute the sentences of people who have served time and didn't do violence. Don't commute and don't pardon the people who did do violence. And he didn't come close to that. He's like, I will do exactly what I want. I am a dog. I will lick myself because I can't and you can't. And that's how we're going to do. And until there is some penalty for what he does, in this and similar realms, he's going to keep doing. Behavior that gets rewarded gets repeated. So it's a dark day. Again, these last 4 days have not been good for rule of law types, and this is primary among it. And I do predict that we will definitely see results of political violence from this, including by some of the people that I think it's pretty safe to predict that were pardoned.
So, this is why I wanted to ask you, blowback or consequences? Because my analysis, I'm not going to make a prediction, but my analysis is, if we're perfectly amoral, Donald Trump actually needed to deny the election results. Otherwise, he'd be just another Republican who lost fair and square, discarded, and the party would move on. So that worked for him. And the people who put that lie into action served a purpose for him. And then what happens is, obviously, he's transactional and is going to reward those people. But I would think that the politics, that good politics, amoral politics, but good politics, would stop at the point that you commit to an action that 70-something percent of the American public and the majority of Republicans don't even support, which is pardoning the cop beaters, the violent ones who we have on tape. So that's the question. I mean, I know you don't love predictions either, but I think that this is in the realm of maybe he overreached if we could pay attention to it a little bit.
I agree. And I think I'm struck by two things in Republicans, congressional Republicans, first of all, some of whom have criticized this, and others who are incapable of defending it. And I saw this congressman from Tennessee, Tim, I think it's Burchett's his name. I'm not sure his name. He's on CNN today. And Jim Acosta was going off on him. And it was, what was funny about it was just watching this guy trying to defend it and not being able to do so. You can't defend this, right? You can't defend Trump pardoning people who beat up police officers. Not a party, not if you're a member of the Republican Party. You can't defend it. And so I do think it does create a backlash. Is it a significant backlash? No. Is it going to stop their agenda? No. But I think it does begin to erode some of Trump's support. But I don't know that that matters all that much. And to be honest with you, what's really going to erode Trump's support is, you know, if he goes through with what he hasn't done, which I think is sort of interesting, which is the tariffs. I think, and the mass deportation. If those things happen and it has the expected inflationary effects, which it should,
that's why.
Then that creates
a
backlash.
If prices go up,
much more
if he goes
backlash.
Through with it, yeah.
Yes.
And Matt, you think we're getting the tariffs?
We're absolutely getting the tariffs. It's just a matter of how big. We're not getting a universal tariff, it looks like, at this point. Trump, especially in his Sinapalooza moments, was talking about this. He's very clearly thinking about all of them as these negotiating chits, whatever you say. Like he was talking
about
the
BRICS nations.
It's like
champing at the bit. Both work and they're one letter off. It's not fair.
I've lost all confidence in all of it. He was talking about the BRICS countries who had been talking about like getting off the dollar as a reserve currency. And it's like, if they try that, 100% tariffs for Spain, it's very bad, BRICS. And he wants to do this sort of individually. He's going to hold up the Chinese tariff, depending on if suddenly we're doing a joint venture, a U.S. government-owned joint venture, holding 50% of TikTok. What the living crap is that? He likes to do these individual things. And it's really interesting, you know, you think about the one president who he is similar to in his career arc. It's Grover Cleveland, right? He's the only person who served non-contiguous terms. Grover Cleveland was famous politically for being the most anti-tariff president you can imagine.
Yeah, that's right, actually.
And yeah. I mean, he was anti-McKinley. McKinley, who now has name back on a mountain that I didn't know had been changed. But fine, Trump reveres him. Grover Cleveland, interesting. Go read his inaugural address, the second one, and also his sort of State of the Union address right around that time. It was all about the corruption associated with tariffs. Because what happens with tariffs? Not only does stuff get more expensive, and that's, you're right, Michael, I think of saying that's when people will start to get irritated by this, but it's really deleterious to the body government and the body politic. Washington, my God, that swamp, they're going to have to build two or three more Trump hotels across the street from the Capitol just to fill the foreign lobbyists, the foreign government lobbyists, the U.S. business, big oil lobbyists and whatever, who are going to be carving out exceptions to those tariffs, right? And all of it, Trump's going to love it because he gets to negotiate deals. He thinks he's great and he's going to be meme coins for everybody. That is such a recipe for corruption. It's insane. And judging by the way that the first first Trump administration went down, which had a lot of corruption issues, not least of which was the Trump Hotel literally across the street. But like, of all the things, people didn't get super excited about that. You know, there's many other things, I guess, to look at. And people were going down their own rabbit holes of their own, I think, conspiracy theories about various things. But the recipe for corruption here is not terrifying, but just kind of like low and bad. And we're going to get him. He said several times yesterday, it's going to be February 1st, Canada 25%, Mexico 25%, unless blah, 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 blah. So he's going to be doing a lot of deals, and there's going to be a shit ton of lobbying.
By the way, I think the ideology is corruption and retribution is just the affect. A friend of mine, okay, I'll be honest, a wife of mine was saying he doesn't believe in anything. I'm like, no, he believes in self-enrichment. And it describes and defines so many of these questions. Oh, he just gets in a fit of pique at CBS for editing a 60-minute segment. So he sues him for $10 billion. Why would he do that? Because he wants retribution. No, it's a shakedown. Don't you get it? They're going to pay him off like ABC paid him off. And if he didn't put the money down for the suit, he wouldn't be there to receive the payoff. So much of this is
just
he's not going
to get paid off for that one, but yes.
Yeah. But let's, but you know, look, I think we have to remember that Trump is an idiot. And Trump is,
I don't think he's completely self-directed. I think he has cunning, and I think.
No, he's an idiot, and he's self-directed in everything that he does. And I mean, look, let's just use the COVID response as an example. Why didn't he want to do anything about COVID? Because he didn't want to acknowledge there was a problem and didn't want it to take away from, you know, this great economy that he thought he was responsible for. I mean, it was all about his image. He sees everything through the prism of his own ego. And so somebody like that does not make for a good president, because everything is about what's the best thing for me. And, you know, I read this earlier today. He might bring some of these January 6th people he pardoned to the White House, which is a terrible idea, which is going to create a backlash, but is great for Trump because it allows them, these people, to stroke his ego, right? And it'll appeal to his MAGA supporters. The thing with Trump, you saw this during the campaign, you're seeing it now, he ultimately just cares about validation and affirmation. And how does he get that? He gets it by playing to his MAGA core. That MAGA core, I know he won the election, I get all of that. That MAGA core is not 49% of the country. It is a smaller percentage. And you're going to eventually see the people even who voted for him because they didn't like Biden or because they thought maybe he'd fix the economy are going to, they're take their support away from him. So I just think you're going to see, I don't think you, any reason to expect anything different than what we saw in his first term. Yes, maybe he knows, maybe people around him have a better sense of how to run the government. They're still incompetent. They still don't believe the government has an important role to play in the lives of the American people. They're still vindictive as hell. They still won't engage in retribution. All of that remains unchanged. And all of those things are, over time, going to weaken his support.
I don't think he's an idiot. I think he's playing a different game than we usually want.
I don't think being a narcissist is being an idiot.
He's a narcissist and he's an idiot. How about both of them? I'm willing to go with both.
I think he's tautologically, politically smart. I hate it.
I think he is accidentally politically smart. I think he falls ass backwards to politically smart. But on a level of like how the government works, you know, he's an idiot.
He had a level of command and detail and also getting things wrong because he's Trump as well. But like at the signing of Palooza yesterday, that would be impossible to imagine Joe Biden ever in his term of office. No, I don't think that Joe Biden would be riffing for like an hour, taking questions, signing stuff, and just like slinging the bull about
tossing
a bunch of panels.
I could not agree with you less on that one, Matt. I remember the press conference he gave right after that awful debate performance, and you saw somebody who actually understood policy issues. Trump has no understanding of policy. I mean, look at him on tariffs, right? I mean, when he talks about tariffs, it's like watching my dog trying to open a door. I mean, he has no idea what he's talking about. He doesn't understand how tariffs work. He doesn't know how they work. He doesn't know the effect they have on consumers. He doesn't get it at all. He has this idea in his head of tariffs, and he's incapable of taking in new information. This is part of the narcissism. But maybe we'll just say he's a narcissist, fine. But the narcissism causes him to do idiotic things. How about we say that?
Do the American people have a deeper understanding of tariffs than he does?
No, because they voted for him, not understanding the effect it's going to have on inflation.
Because he kind of created reality. He defined tariffs in a certain way. They believed in it. So that's not, to me, stupid. That's hype. That's salesmanship. He sold them this thing that might not be in their best interest. And I don't know what he knows about it, but he got people to believe that this is a silver bullet. And by the way, we said the same things in his first term, and the Biden administration kept a lot of those tariffs in place.
That was kind of the problem. Like, the Democrats would be much more effective messaging on tariffs if they hadn't kept Chinese tariffs in place, hadn't like done a lot of made in America crap, and, you know, took a lot of that. You know, the occasionally Kamala Harris would say the right thing about tariffs and then in the next breath, like, support, I don't know, tariffs. So, it makes the messaging kind of more difficult. I don't think Americans voted because of tariffs, though.
No, they didn't.
I think there's a people invest a lot of hope in that guy. They know he's a blunt instrument. They always will say, oh, I don't like the tweets, or I don't like this and that and the other, which I don't believe anyone really believes, but they say it. So it's worth listening to people, take them at least somewhat at face value. But because they see him as the best way to express this sort of fundamental irritation at a whole bunch of things.
Yes.
Much of which is caused by democratic governance, but some of it is not. A lot of it is not. The annoyance that one feels as a parent of kids in Brooklyn is not because of Joe Biden, because of the way that the local schools communicate with you, the way they closed during COVID. Okay, maybe Biden a little bit to do with it.
It's because of the garbage in Michael Cohen Park.
Garbage in Michael Cohen Park. Yeah. That's a nice park. It's a pretty good park.
It's a nice
park.
Does Michael Cohen have a Bette Midler relationship to the park? Is he cleaning it up?
Can I just get
one thing in here? The messaging on tariffs does not matter. What matters is that if there's a tariff on Mexican goods and, you know, eggs or whatever agricultural product costs more money, that's the message, right? Trump was elected largely because there was this global backlash against incumbency that was driven in part by inflation, right? By the way, interest rates right now, mortgage rates 7%, pretty damn high. But if those don't go down, and if inflation gets worse, that's what's going to matter, not the messaging and not whatever he says about tariffs. Now, granted, the MAGA people will support Trump no matter what. But if what he said he was going to do and bring prices down, and by the way, if you listen to him on this, he's incredibly vague about what he's going to do to bring prices down. If he doesn't do it,
energy,
he's going to fail on the president.
I think that there's something to the fact that, you know, issue X is not going to change things. That doesn't mean that Democrats shouldn't be not just better at messaging, but better at governing on issue X. And they weren't. And that's also a problem. I think also, yes, Trump's, we should see the honeymoon period for what it is. And this is similar the first time he ran for president. Yes. I think it's possible it could go up a little bit more right now. There's some indications of like overall sense up towards the Democratic and Republican parties that we haven't seen for quite some time. So it's possible it goes up a little bit. There is that vibe shift feels, as vague as it is, somewhat real. So that's interesting to look at. But it's also, I think, equally possible given the chaos and the tumult that's coming, that's already kind of here, and the upset that that will cause, that we're close to the peak of his popularity, and he's a lame duck president. At some point, people are going to realize this.
And at some point, Republicans are going to realize that.
No, that's what I mean by that.
Fair enough.
But I would say, Michael, one of your theses is that just like the first time, he doesn't have real solutions. And so because of that, he'll get unpopular. And you all say people didn't vote for tariffs. I agree. They voted for immigration and inflation. But on the immigration part of it, I think there are wins available to him that weren't during his first term because of what Matt Welch was saying. Poor Democratic governance. For three quarters of Biden's term, they only looked at the border as a place to be humane to asylum seekers as opposed to a place to stanch asylum seekers. So I do think that he has some wins out there that he didn't have the first time. And I also think that he has a lot more knowledge and momentum and maybe even a better staff than he for what he's trying to do than he did the first time. So these are factors that convince me that it's not going to be a total replay of this dissolute president without any real solutions who will quickly get exposed.
I agree with that.
But on the immigration thing, I mean, do you know that December 2024 was the lowest period of crossings across, over the southern border since August of 2020? The thing is, the immigration debate is so
in anticipation of Trump becoming president because they're intimidated.
And also Joe Biden changed things around in the last six months.
Exactly. But my point on
immigration... We're talking about people still already in the country after record-setting immigration.
But the reality of immigration... The reality is divorced from the rhetoric, right? They made this into an issue which was effective on the campaign trail. Now he's in charge of it. The immigration thing does not really affect people's lives directly. It really doesn't. It affects... I mean, in some places it does, but in most places in America, immigrants coming across the border does not affect the daily lives of the American people. And I will tell you something. I know that mass deportation right now polls pretty well. But when you start seeing people, kids taken away from their parents, these kind of raids, it's not...
Look, when and if they do it poorly, you're right. It won't.
They will.
I don't think it remains something that will be... I mean...
It's just like war.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So the last thing, and I did promise this, but I just think how much we've tamped down the tone and text of his speech does tell me something, because I've been trying to think about and articulate for just listeners how I'm going to cover Trump 2.0. And the answer is to pay much, much less attention to what he says and more of what he does. So call the speech not quite Carnage 2.0. Call the speech or speeches that he gave just somewhat gussied up version of campaign speeches. That's fine. I'm not even going to argue. There's so much more substance, such as it is, sometimes with nonsensical executive actions, sometimes with potent executive action. But there's so much more substance and policy to deal with. I hope we don't get as distracted by the words or the gestures as we did the first time.
Good luck.
Good luck.
We just spent 24 hours doing the blue and yellow dress thing with Elon Musk's hand movements.
Yeah.
There are issues of huge human consequences. There are people who are supposed to get on flights, thousands of them, to the U.S. who have planned their lives around it. That is not happening now. That is so much more significant than trying to, you know, do the okay sign out the window 2.0 or whatever this is. I don't even know what it is.
And now we turn to the portion of the show where if something's gotten your goat or if something grinds your gears, we're going to give it voice right now. These are our goat grinders. Michael Cohen, would you like to go first with your goat grinder?
There are so many things that have gotten my goat. I mean, the last 3 days, you can only imagine. But I'm going to go a little bit into left field here.
Figuratively. Right field.
I guess right field, right? Right field. and I'm going to complain about the fact that yesterday, Ichiro Suzuki, one of the greatest baseball players I ever saw, was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And some idiot who votes for the Hall of Fame did not vote to induct Ichiro in the Hall of Fame. Now, I don't care that's unanimous. It doesn't matter all that much. But if you follow baseball, if you write about baseball, if it's your job, if you've given the awesome power of being able to elect someone to the Hall of Fame and you cannot recognize that Ichiro belongs in the Hall of Fame, you shouldn't have that power. But also, now that I'm going to grind this, I'm also going to grind over the fact that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, two of the greatest baseball players in the history of the game, Bonds arguably the greatest, maybe after Babe Ruth, are not in the Hall of Fame. And that is, as my people would say, a shanda.
How about A-Rod and Curt Schilling?
I hate A-Rod. Another one. How is he not in the Hall of Fame either? It's ridiculous.
Manny Ramirez getting 4% of the vote. He was a pretty good player.
There's so many. But Bonds and Clemens are the two that really just get my goat. Because Barry Bonds, seriously, after Babe Ruth, and maybe even before Babe Ruth, greatest baseball hitter. Clemens, top five all-time pitcher.
I think we had a real moment at when Pete Rose died. We could have had this jubilee. We could have said, yes, there was a lifetime ban against Pete Rose because he gambled in baseball, which is a total golden rule thing. But now he's dead. Come on in, Pete Rose. Come on in, Shoeless Joe Jackson. And you know what? Barry Bonds and all the people, Rafael Palmeiro, you know, the steroid era, like enough, right? Some of you people didn't even ever get a positive drug test. A lot of it's a whisper campaign. Just enough. They were great players before. It wasn't just because of steroids. Let's
Barry Bonds
on.
Was the first ballot Hall of Famer before he ever put anything in his body.
But yeah, I say this as a huge Ichiro Suzuki fan, as big as one can be, who competes against his. Michael Cohen's being upset that a single human being didn't vote the way that he likes is exactly why Democrats lose everything all the time and deserve it. This isn't Castro's Cuba. We get to vote how we like, D. damn it.
And he voted wrong.
I voted for Ralph Nader, dude. We're all weird. We vote strangely. It's fine.
And you know what? I am as an American, it is my right to say they voted incorrectly. And I'm going to say that about this voter.
I like the analogy, though. Pete Rose, consider him the Enrique Tarrio of baseball. Barry Bonds, he's the Stuart Rhodes of baseball.
They're all pardoned.
They're all in. All right, mine is a very different direction. You know, the snail darter for years halted a dam in Tennessee. And it's very small and it's very annoying. But I guess the environmentalists had a case, and first they came for the snail darter, then I said nothing, and then they came for some actual charismatic megafauna, and we're slaughtering pandas in the name of a bypass of some interstate. But it turns out that there is no snail darter. There is no such thing as a snail darter. It was just a misclassification. The expert said that early researchers, quote, squinted their eyes a bit when describing the fish. They invented this snail darter, just a cousin of another quite well-known existing fish. And the snail darter stopped the Tellico Dam. And I'm going to tell you something. And I know you're from L.A. originally, Matt. There is a bobcat with a kink tail that is known as whatever, L95. And they claim this bobcat is of its own species. I am not a taxonomist. I have never done the DNA. There is no way that the kink-tailed bobcat is its own species. They just say that to try to prevent, maybe in a good way, to try to prevent their version of the Tellico Dam on an interstate in Malibu, poor charred Malibu now. But I think that there are many, many animals that don't exist, imaginary animals. They're just trying to get dams to not be built and damn them.
I hate dams, so part of me is fine with that, but I also hate lying.
Why do you hate dams?
Because I'm pro riparian nature, man. I'm a radical anti-dammer. Klamath.
Have you been to the Hoover Dam? It's awesome. It's awesome.
I don't like going to MSNBC. Promotional sets. No, it's a beautiful thing to look at, but I lament the loss of some of the great canyons of the Grand Canyon system, and I'm a big fan of the deconstruction of the dams of the Klamath River. I think it's one of the most exciting undercover stories in America, but that makes me a weirdo, I understand. I would just add to your point, Pesca, that you read about there's some kind of milkweed or something semi-rare up in the hills above Palisades that stopped a brush clearance there. Who knows what made a difference, but stop letting the milkweed stop your brush clearance.
Yeah, no.
There's a way that they just gum up every possible word.
We're sitting on 75% of the world's, what is the metal that's needed to build, to make cell phones? It's a very important
iridium
metal.
Or something.
Iridium, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, we're sitting on some gigantic stockpile of a chemical, and due to this, it's not a milkweed, but it's some version of a weed, some version of a buckwheat. That's it, a buckwheat flower. We can't get this. And I know nature shouldn't be despoiled, and yet at the same time, everyone uses a cell phone and needs to keep using them. I say screw the snail darter, screw the buckwheat. Screw it all.
Ouch, Pesca. Harsh.
Matt, what's your go grinder?
I will admit that, like a good American, a good Republican with a small R American, I almost managed to not watch any of the inaugural proceedings because I don't believe in coronations. And yet, of what little I saw, I did see the fateful, and here comes Donald John Trump. They only get the middle name of these MFers on big pomp and circumstance day. Robinette Biden II.
Right.
Enough of this stuff. Let's retain our civic, our American self-respect. We're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence from the King. Let's get rid of some of these monarchical trappings. Stop playing these ridiculous songs. Stop obsessing over all of the costumes, although Milani looked awesome. Let's all admit that. But enough already. Let's regain our civic self-respect and instead spend Inauguration Day drinking pina coladas in Miami.
I did enjoy they did Battle Hymn of the Republic. That is one of my favorite patriotic songs. That's the only thing I'll say positive about the inaugural ceremony.
All the women in the Marine Choir, is it? They all have to have that same haircut. I feel for them. The Marine Corps Women's Reserve Band. There's another. That, like the snail darter, doesn't need to exist.
Shout out, though, to Carrie Underwood, not only for singing a cappella and nailing it, but I don't know if you guys saw this clip, like crushing it on the drums. Like she's going full Karen Carpenter as part of her overall performance. I didn't see that. Oh, yeah. She's like playing like some heavy metal drums, too. It's great.
It's amazing. Yeah, I got this. At any moment when they were waiting for 3 minutes for the music to kick in, wasn't everyone who's familiar with the Carrie Underwood saying, just like Carrie Underwood saying it.
I also appreciate the fact that Lauren Sanchez watched the Seinfeld episode about where they use a bra as a shirt, and she thought it was real and decided to wear that to the inaugural ceremony. I mean, I almost got to give her credit for that one.
Michael, they are real, and they are fantastic.
No, they're not.
So we ask you, should you care to subscribe directly to the Not Even Mad feed, that specific feed. I'll put a little something extra in there to incentivize you thereof. And until next time, I would like to thank my guests, Matt Welch and Michael Cohen. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. A lot of fun.
I'm not saying we're right. I'm not saying you're right. I am saying we are not even mad.
Hi, this is Joanna from New York City, and I am a very proud Pesca Plus subscriber. That's it for today's show. The Gist is produced by Joel Patterson and Corey Wara, the Quaint Mallards. Michelle Pesca, my bestie, is COO of Peachfish Productions. Leo Baum is our intern. To advertise with us, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Un Peru, Di Peru, Do Peru, Poo Poo Peru, whatever the hell Peru. What does that even mean? Anyway, thanks for listening.